Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18. I'm only going to do the first part of the verse because it's a lot of things to deal with this subject. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18a. And be not drunk with wine, wherein is excess. Now, these modern versions that are supposed to be so much easier to understand, you know what they put there? Wherein is dissipation. That's easier to understand, isn't it? I just don't get that. But anyway, it has the same general meaning, but the thing is, it's supposed to be easier to understand, but that word is like way over top here. Excess, it makes good sense, easy to understand. But that's when I'll save that again for the time when I'm dealing with the King James Version as we go through the worth of the word on Sunday mornings. Be not drunk with wine. Now, this is a must. If we are going to be seeking to give God the glory in His churches, drunkenness clouds the mind and inflames the passions. Clear and sober thinking and disciplining of the passions puts us in the proper position to honor our God and to benefit others. You know, alcoholism is a big problem today. Did you know there's over 20 million people who are alcoholics just in this country alone? And about 3.5 million of them are teenagers. It's a serious, serious problem. It kills with drunk driving, with unbridled passions, with clouded thinking, along with destroying homes. Alcohol is nothing to play around with. And I myself and my own family situation can relate to that. My dad was alcoholic. His dad was an alcoholic. My uncles were alcoholics. My brother. And it messes families up. So I can definitely sympathize with those who have suffered as a result of alcoholism, the abuse of alcohol. This is an excellent example, though, where people go to extremes when dealing with this subject. You have the extreme of legalism, demanding something in addition to God's law. That's what legalism is. Or to the extremes of antinomianism. That is, promoting something in opposition to God's law. So you can go to either extreme, and you see that in this particular topic, in this particular text, where people go into legalism and people go into antinomianism. I want to make it real clear, though, as we look at this, the abundance of Scripture that warns against the drinking of alcoholic beverages. Proverbs chapter 20. There's a number of them in Proverbs. What is the book of Proverbs referred to as? The book of wisdom. So if we want to be wise, we need to take heed to these things. I tell you, I don't trust myself to be able to do what's right. I need wisdom from God. And so we see here in Proverbs 20 and verse 1, wine is a mocker. Strong drink is raging. And whosoever is deceived thereby is not wise. Then we find in Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 17, he that loveth pleasure shall be a poor man. He that loveth wine and oil shall not be rich. Why? Because that wine is going to take up all his money because I want more and more and more and more and more and so on. It's addictive. Proverbs 23, beginning in verse 20. Be not among the winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh. They'll be hanging around them. For the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall clothe a man with rags. Now jump on down to verse 29 in the same chapter. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath babbling? Who hath wounds without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? They that tarry long at the wine. They that go to seek mixed wine. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth his color in the cup, when it moveth itself aright. This is all about fermentation process and so on. Don't even look at it. What are we supposed to do? Flee things like that. At the last, verse 32, it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like an adder. Thine eyes shall behold strange women, and thine heart shall utter perverse things. Yea, thou shalt be as he that lieth down on the midst of the sea, in the midst of the sea, or as he that lieth upon the top of a mast. They have stricken me, shalt thou say, and I was not sick. They have beaten me, and I felt it not. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. It's addictive. It's destructive. Some of us have, by personal experience, understood what that means. Sad to say, I'm one of them who experienced the bad effects of drinking alcohol and abusing it. We want to look at this. Be not drunk with wine, first of all, by asking the question, is drinking lawful, number one? Is drinking lawful? And we understand we're talking about alcoholic beverages. Is it lawful? Well, the first question we have to ask is, because so many people bring this argument up, okay? What kind of wine is the wine that's mentioned in the Bible? Is it alcoholic wine, non-alcoholic wine, as some people call it, or what is it? Well, let's look at the Hebrew first. Now, there are some words that are translated wine. I'm not going to deal with every single one of them that mean wine, a flagon of wine or a wine press. I'm not going to deal with those because it's not talking about the actual liquid. So understand, that's why I'm not bringing these out. The first one is in the Hebrew that's mentioned 137 times, which is by far the most times that's mentioned in the Bible. And it's a Hebrew word, yayin. It's translated wine. This same kind of wine, it means to effervescence, which means to bubble. Okay? Has to do with fermentation. Noah got drunk on this same wine, the same word, in Genesis 9:21. And the daughters of Lot used this same Hebrew word to get their father drunk, to raise up seed. It's the same word used as a drink offering to the Lord. No leaven's allowed. It's wine. It's fermented. It's the same accusation that Eli gave to Hannah. She was drunk with wine or strong drink. And it's that same Hebrew word, yayin. The second one's used 38 times. And it means wine, fresh or new wine, kind of like a syrupy kind of concoction, freshly pressed wine. This oftentimes means is a general statement. It's oftentimes mentioned along with corn and oil and the wine or the grapes. The product of what's coming from the field of the vineyard or whatever. So it's a very, very general term. However, that being said, that does not tell us that it's, first of all, it's not used most of the time in the Old Testament. And second of all, there's nothing that tells us, well, that's automatically just a syrup that's non-fermented. Some people will take that word and they'll say, oh, the whole idea of bubbling means that what they did is that they boiled the water to purify it, and that's the bubbling, and they got a syrup-like thing to make jams and all that stuff. That may be true. However, the problem with all that is that you have all these people getting drunk on it. Okay? Just like here. In Hosea chapter 4 and verse 11, it says, whoredom and wine, yayin, and new wine, which is that other word, tirosh. That's used 38 times. Take away the heart. Why? Because it influences your thinking. Grape juice is not going to influence your thinking and cloud your thinking. So what do we see here? Is an equating, if you will, even a magnifying, as we go to whoredom, wine, new wine. Then we have that same word is translated strong wine or strong drink. That's the Hebrew word shekar. And it, again, is mentioned as a drink offering in Numbers 28:7. Then we have the Aramaic word that's found in Ezra, Daniel, and so on, which many of the times during the captivity, that's the original language that's used, that was common for that area. And it is the Aramaic word kamar. And it refers to, in Ezra, the priest portion that was used for the drink offering, which was alcoholic. And other offerings are mentioned within the context here, so that leads us to believe that. It is also the very same word that is used in the book of Daniel when speaking of Belshazzar as he is drinking wine out of the vessels from the Lord's house. So same thing. Then we have the word masak. Mamsak means drink, mixed wine, drink offering. And then the word sobe. It is translated wine, a drink or liquor. And then we have the word kemer, and that means red wine. And then we have finally in the Hebrew asis, which is new wine, sweet wine, or juice, pressed out juice. Now, this doesn't mean, again, that it is just grape juice. You have to press it out to be able to get wine. So those are the nine Hebrew words that we find in the Old Testament. Now let's look at the Greek words. The word that's used the most is actually in the Septuagint. It takes the word yayin, the one that's used the most in the Hebrew, and this is the Greek word that goes in that place in the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Old Testament. And it is the word oinos. Oinos is that primary word. It's translated wine 32 times. It's by far the most often used in the New Testament. It also is used in referring to the wine of God's wrath in the book of Revelation. And be not drunk with wine. That is the exact word. Oinos is the exact word that's used in our text here in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18. It's that same word, oinos. And so, be not drunk with wine. Well, it couldn't be talking about grape juice because you can't get drunk on grape juice. It's talking about wine. Grape juice has been fermented. You can get drunk with it. The other time that is used is really a word, same word, but a prefix is in front of it, as parioinos, and it means given to wine, two times. And then we find in the word sakira, which is used once, and it refers to strong drink. John the Baptist wasn't to drink this or wine, so that makes us believe that he was possibly a Nazarite. So we see this too. Notice in Acts chapter 2, verse 13. Others said, these men are full of new wine. This is the word glucose, where we get the word glucose. And it means a new wine, a sweet juice pressed with the grape, sweet wine. It must be alcoholic. Why would they say these men are full of new wine as if you're drunk? They're speaking all different languages, understand? Peter says, no, this is 9 o'clock in the morning. That's not likely to be happening. And so he's defending them by saying, no, we can't be drunk. So the idea again, the reference must be to wine that you can get drunk on, it's got alcohol in it. And then, of course, we see in Luke chapter 5, Jesus referring to this in verse 37 and 38, and no man putteth new wine into old bottles, else the new wine will burst the bottles and be spilled, and the bottles shall perish. But new wine must be put into new bottles, and both are preserved. The idea is you got new wine. That's young wine, I guess you could say. And as it ferments more and more, if you have an old wine skin, what'll happen, it's already been stretched. And then as that expands during the fermentation process, it's going to burst. It's going to stretch it even more to the bursting point. So that's the words that we see in the New Testament. So we see the Bible has examples of people drinking. Jesus turned water into wine, that same oinos that we spoke of earlier. We see that wine was actually used during a Passover after the Babylonian captivity. This was not originally in the law, but it was instituted after the Passover as a tradition. And the cup that was being used was actually wine in when Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper. That's why we get that from, and of course, another place that we're going to talk about here in just a minute. So what am I saying? Is drinking lawful? It's not forbidden in the Bible. It is not forbidden. Now, that may come to a surprise to some of you. Again, I sympathize. And I'll give you some reasons why I don't drink in a little bit. But just understand, if we're going to use the Bible as our guide, we must understand that drinking is not forbidden at all. We don't see that in the Bible. Now, we understand a few things on the background of the Bible. Being able to keep food from spoiling was something that was a challenge in that day, including fruit, grape juice, all that kind of stuff. So they didn't have refrigeration like we do. And so in fermenting the grapes, the juice, it helped preserve the beverage. Okay? Now understand, let me explain. Just like today, there's different wines for different purposes with different strengths. Okay? And the same thing today as back then. There's a differing of the strengths and the according to the purpose and taste of the purpose and the taste of the person. But anyway, we see also that water was not always pure. And so being able to have something that was purified, like wine, was very beneficial. The wine would help to purify even water. You mix it with the water. People did that. We also realize in arid, semi-arid places, like the Middle East, water was not very plentiful. And so having wine as a beverage was very helpful. Now, by far, we see that, again, the scriptures indicate that the wine mentioned is fermented. It can make you drunk. It varies in strengths. There are a few minimal cases where there is a strengthening of the wine, a diminishing of the effects of the wine by adding strong drink or adding water or some other spices or liquid. So, is drinking lawful? Yes. My second question is drinking conditional? In other words, are there conditions attached to this, the lawfulness of drinking? Are there some conditions attached? Well, it says, first of all, in our text, be not drunk with wine. Drunkenness is forbidden, according to our text. Okay, I know what some of you are thinking. I'll get there in a minute. Drunkenness is forbidden. That's what it says. There's no other way to interpret this passage. The Lord's Supper. How did they get drunk on grape juice? Well, they didn't. It was wine. That's why we use wine. It's interesting to note that before the prohibition, they all used wine, and all of a sudden after prohibition or during prohibition, there was a change that made where churches decided to use grape juice instead. Why is that? Go along to get along. I don't know what. There's no liberty there. And I'm not going to preach on the Lord's Supper except just to say that the fermentation process kills the leaven. And we cannot represent leaven in the blood of Jesus Christ. We don't have that liberty. But then another condition is there were medicinal purposes for wine back then. And they still have purposes today, except we use different medicines than they used back then. They used more natural remedies, no chemical laboratories that artificially produced like we have today. For instance, wine was used as an antiseptic. Now, alcohol, you know, does cleanse wounds. Remember the Good Samaritan? He poured in the what? The oil and the wine. Helps kill the germs. Okay? You know, we sometimes put alcohol to kill the germs. Well, they didn't have the kind of laboratories that we have, and they would just pour in the oil and the wine. It was an antiseptic. So there's a condition there. Then also we see, some of us are familiar with this, there in 1 Timothy 5:23, Paul says, don't drink water, but take a little wine for thy stomach's sake. Okay, it was to benefit his stomach ailments, whatever they were, we're not too sure. But it was a medicinal merit for Timothy. And then in Proverbs 31 and verse 6. The other medicinal purpose, it says, give strong drink. Give strong drink unto him that is ready to perish. Somebody getting ready to die. Give them strong drink. What do we do today? Give them some morphine. Okay? They do that because they're in great pain. They give them some kind of oxycodone or whatever it is, and they're in great pain. And so they're given as a painkiller. And wine unto those that be of heavy hearts. Now, I want us to notice something here. This was a limited occasion. Not something you do all the time. It was a medicinal purpose. Not something that happens all the time. It wasn't something that someone practiced doing on an everyday weekend warrior kind of basis. Remember, it says, be not drunk with wine. Okay? Christ, first of all, should be our joy and our help. First and foremost. But then we see the sons of Aaron, the priests, and they're in Leviticus 10:9. Do not drink wine, nor strong drink, thou, nor thy sons with thee, when you go into the tabernacle of the congregation, lest ye die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generation. Later on, they violated that command. And Ezekiel called them on the carpet about it. You had to be so precise when going into the temple. You could not afford to have any kind of clouded thinking when you went in there. Okay? The Nazarites, as I mentioned before, in Numbers 6:3 and 20, that was a voluntary thing. They didn't have to do it. John the Baptist probably was one. Samuel and so on. Samson. Pastors are not to be given to wine. In 1 Timothy 3:3, deacons are not to be given to much wine. 1 Timothy 3:8, aged women who teach the younger women. Titus 2:3, the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. And then kings and rulers. Proverbs 31:4, it is not for kings, O Lemuel. It is not for kings to drink wine, nor for princes strong drink. The idea here is they are forbidden. There are some forbidding statutes that are given in certain situations where no strong drink or wine is ever to be used. And the reason is it is something that will cause you to not think clearly, not to be sober-minded. Now, the third and last question is drinking expedient? Is drinking lawful? Is drinking conditional? And is drinking expedient? 1 Corinthians, and it's funny that the Corinthian church is mentioned to them twice. And they had to be told things over and over again. They lived in a very ungodly culture. But it says there, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6:12, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. I'm not going to be under the unlawful influence or control. Okay? I don't know about you, but as I think back on those days, I don't like the thought of being controlled by some kind. Well, I don't even like taking some of these antihistamines that make you feel like you're in a cave or something, you know. I don't even like taking that. So I don't want this to have power over me. Then we find there in 1 Corinthians 10:23, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. Second time. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. That just because I may have the liberty to do something doesn't mean it's going to build up and help people. drinking would tend to tear down your testimony, though you're not getting drunk. It destroys the weak, and we don't need it. With the present medicines that we have, that we don't need it. The word translated expedient is the Greek word sumphero, and it means profit. Is it profitable? Is it better? Is it good? Well, drinking and driving is deadly. Being drunk starts with one drink. Why lead myself into temptation? You know, I pray, Lord, lead me not into temptation. Then I lead my own self into temptation. That doesn't make sense. It says there in Luke 21:34, and take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting, which means giddiness, and the headaches that occur from drinking too much to the point of intoxication. And drunkenness and cares of this life, so that that day come upon you unawares. You're not going to be ready. There in 1 Corinthians 5:11, but now I have written unto you not to keep company. That is, don't let someone be a part of the church. If any man that is called a brother be a fornicator or covetous or an adulterer or a railer or a drunkard or an extortioner with such and one, know not to eat. Now it's not talking about a regular meal. It's talking about the Lord's Supper. Jesus ate with publicans and sinners. So it couldn't mean that, or we would have violated this. It's talking about the Lord's Supper. Then in 1 Corinthians 6:10, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom of God. You know, alcohol is not in the recommended daily allowances that you find labels on in your foods and so on and so forth. Again, I don't need it. Abusing alcohol is harmful to your health. It's harmful to the welfare of other people around you. Do I want to, in my testimony that I leave, when someone sees me drinking, do I want to throw out a stumbling block to the weak and cause them to go into drinking and then drunkenness and then alcoholism and destroying their family and so forth? Is it worth it? No, it's not worth it. What about the alcoholic? I got people in my family who are alcoholics. If I start flouting my liberty, I'm going to cause them to stumble. It's not expedient. Matter of fact, Romans 14:21 says, it is good neither to eat flesh nor to drink wine, nor anything whereby thy brother stumbleth or is offended or is made weak. Most people in our culture, in this Bible Belt that we live in, would consider you a hypocrite if they found you drinking and professing to be a Christian. There are far more warnings against drinking than examples of those drinking. Look at what it says there in Habakkuk 2:15. Woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, that putteth thy bottle to him and maketh him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. It encourages immorality. You get in a position of really embarrassing yourself and causing others to sin and so forth, and causing yourself to sin and giving dishonor to God. It says there in Isaiah 28:7. But they also have erred through wine and through strong drink are out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through strong drink. They are swallowed up of wine. They are out of the way through strong drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. Again, it causes you to think with a clouded mind, the reasoning and the judging of right and wrong is blurred when someone is under the influence of alcohol. And as we've already mentioned in Proverbs, it causes you to stumble and have bruises and all this kind of stuff without cause. And I'd like to just look over here just for a moment. I know we're running out of time here, but look over there in Jeremiah chapter 35. It says, the word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, go into the house of the Rechabites and speak unto them, bring them unto the house of the Lord into the chambers to give them wine to drink. Now I want you to notice, book of Jeremiah is a very dark spiritual time. It is a crisis situation. Remember, they didn't have to drink wine for the Passover. Okay, this was before the captivity anyway. But notice, it says, then I took Jaazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Habazaniah, and his brethren, and all his sons, and the whole house of Rechabites, and brought them into the house of the Lord, into the chamber of the sons of Hanan, the son of Igdaliah, and a man of God, which was by the chamber of the princes, which was above the chamber of Maaseiah, the son of Shalom, the keeper of the door. And I set before the sons of the house of Rechabites pots full of wine and cups, and said unto them, drink ye wine. But they said, we will drink no wine. For Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever. Neither shall ye build house, nor sow seed, nor plant vineyards, nor have any, but all your days ye shall dwell in tents, that ye may live many days in the land where ye be strangers. What's he talking about? He's talking about this captivity that's about to occur. Okay? Getting ready. If you're going to be in a time of crisis, you cannot afford to have unclear thinking. And wine will do that. Now, we find also, thus we have we obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in that he charged us to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters, nor to build houses for us to dwell in. Neither have we vineyards, nor field, nor seed, but we have dwelt in tents and have obeyed and done according to all that Jonadab, our father, commanded us. Now, I'm just going to stop right there. Anyway, Jeremiah commended them. They listened to their father, and Judah wouldn't even listen to them, God. And that was the point. The idea is that they didn't drink any wine, so their mind would not be clouded. They didn't live in tents because they're going to be wandering, because they're going to be strangers in the land of captivity. And so in a time of crisis, they didn't plant food. They can't take their garden with them. So for food, they had herds of animals to sustain themselves when they are wandering around as God's people down in ages past in dens and caves of the earth. So finally, I understand why somebody would preach teetotalism. In other words, don't drink at all. I can understand that. It's not expedient to drink for a child of God, except in the Lord's Supper. Of course, the awful devastation that occurs with alcohol abuse. You can understand that. I don't drink because of all the alcoholics in my family. I don't drink. I don't drink because I don't want to lead myself into temptation. I don't drink because of the warnings, abundant warnings that I see in the Scriptures. I don't trust myself. I don't drink because of my past drinking days. I don't drink because of the stigma attached to drinking and for testimony's sake and to win others to Christ. And I don't want others to stumble. 1 Peter 4:3 says, for the time past of our life may suffice us to have wrought the will of the Gentiles. When we walked in lasciviousness, lust, excess of wine, revelings, banquetings, and abominable idolatries. The god Bacchus, Dionysus, is another word for this god that was worshipped among the heathens. And this god was associated with drunkenness, revelry, and sexual immorality that was associated with it. And that has a reference probably to what they were involved with beforehand. And the wild dancing and the frenzy dances. Doesn't it remind you of what you might see at a rock concert today? That same kind of demonic worship. So, remember, be not drunk with wine, or in his excess. And may God help us to realize that drinking for the child of God is not expedient. Well, let's go ahead and close and begin our season of prayer.